Hey guys, welcome back to the second hour. I'm Grace Baldridge, joined by Simone Boyce and Mark Thompson. Welcome to the Friday show. I can't believe they let me run this thing on my own. But I'm excited to get into some stories with you guys. First, let's hear from some TYT Live tweets. Matthew Reed says, hashtag TYT Live, here's the thing about capitalism. People read the econ textbook until FM. They don't read stuff like Tragedy of the Commons. That was referencing a story that you guys covered in the first hour.
Right.
And then I am Sock. It isn't pollution that's harming the environment. It's the impurities in our air and water that are doing it. Dan Quayle. Quoting Dan Quayle.
Yeah.
That was one of my, my brother had a joke book growing up, and there was an entire section that was just direct quotes from Dan Quayle.
Yeah, he, you know, my mother, I'll just quickly, she was a teacher in Washington. That's where I grew up, in Washington. And she had Dan Quayle's daughter in her class. And she, and this is so funny how it, when something's humanized, because, you know, we all just made, we thought Dan Quayle was just one big joke. She said, Mark, please stop making fun of Dan Quayle. I have the Quayle child in my class.
The Quayle child?
Yeah.
She's just, she can't take it. And it made me feel a little bad about it, but I guess.
A tiny little quail egg.
A tiny little quail. She's now grown up and probably.
She's a full quail now.
She's a grown quail.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a lot of things to cover today. Pretty heavy stories on the first end, but then we're gonna end on some uplifting and encouraging progressive stories. But first, an investigation has been launched after an actress has told LAPD that she was raped by Harvey Weinstein. An Italian model actress met with Los Angeles police detectives for more than 2 hours Thursday morning, providing a detailed account of new allegations that movie mogul Harvey Weinstein sexually assaulted her at a hotel in 2013. She is the sixth woman to accuse Weinstein of rape or forcible sex acts. Los Angeles Police Captain Billy Hayes confirmed that the department has launched an investigation into the matter. Now, the reason why this is particularly interesting is because it falls within the 10-year statute of limitations in the state of California. So it could open up some new doors if there is evidence that there could be a prosecution and perhaps even an indictment. Now, the 38-year-old woman does not want to be named because she is fearful of retaliation and concerned for her children. But she does have a detailed account that was printed in the LA Times today. And in part, here's some of it. He bullied his way into my hotel room, saying, I'm not going to have sex with you, I just want to talk, the woman told the Times. Once inside, he asked me questions about myself, but soon became very aggressive and demanding and kept asking to see me naked. Eventually, she goes on to say about how he dragged her into a bathroom and forcibly raped her. It's really graphic to read, but it is important that we read all of these allegations that are coming forward. Then what's particularly troubling is that she alleges that when he left, he told her that she was very beautiful and that she was going to work in Hollywood. So we're seeing that power dynamic play out in these allegations. What's also interesting is that the allegation could bolster a New York police investigation into a report that Weinstein forced an aspiring actress in 2004 to perform oral sex on him, as the LA case involves similar acts. Lucia Evans told the New Yorker that Weinstein assaulted her during a meeting at his Miramax office. Now, these are more than the 40 women who have come forward, actresses, studio workers, and models, and one of them to add her voice to what she calls a conspiracy of silence is Academy Award-winning actress Lupita Nyong'o, who released a four-page, really interesting, compelling, and disturbing accusation of her experience with Harvey Weinstein. I would encourage you to check it out. It's from the New York Times, but in part what she says is after some other encounters, this is what she calls out. Before the starters arrived, so they were at dinner, he announced, let's cut to the chase. I have a private room upstairs where we can have the rest of our meal. I was stunned. I told him I preferred to eat in the restaurant. He told me not to be so naive. If I wanted to be an actress, then I had to be willing to do this sort of thing. He said he had dated famous actress X and Y. Look where it had gotten them. When she did turn down his request, or not even request is not the right word for that. He basically said, I don't know about your career, but you'll be fine. She was confirming, hey, are we good? Is this totally ruining my career as an actress? And then she goes on to say about after she had won the Academy Award, how he totally changed his tune and gave some sort of a backwards apology for his accusations. Now, what she keeps calling out in this New York Times piece is she wants to combat the conspiracy of silence in Hollywood. So do you think all these women coming forward, this is what we need to combat this conspiracy of silence?
I think
think you need women, but you also need men. You need everyone. I think it's so courageous for all these women to come out and talk about this. And Lupita, she was very detailed, very candid mm-hmm. in this essay that she wrote. So that is, you know, not everybody is there yet. Not everybody is at that place where they can be open about this experience because it is so painful, it is so traumatic. But I think for anybody who is at that place and mentally ready to talk about it, it just helps create an environment that's more transparent. We need more transparency going forward. Hollywood is incredibly unprofessional, and I think that's part of the problem here. I mean, it's a huge systemic issue, but we definitely need to be talking about this stuff and reporting it.
What's your response, Mark?
Yeah, and as you say, if it creates an environment where those who are almost ready to talk about it finally come forward, then it is effective, you know? I mean, having this out there is definitely better than what it was a year ago, which was not having any of this stuff out there. And, you know, these stories, so hard to read, the constellation of things that happen, the same, right? I mean, this story is so believable because he's done essentially the same dance with all these different people. And so there's just no way that everybody's got the same beats in their dance unless these things all happen. It's disgusting, and yet you need to have these disgusting details and this out there for people to feel more comfortable, I think, coming forward. So yes, it makes a difference.
Do you think that these stories, and the one most recently that we were talking about of the unnamed model actress, could lead to charges being brought against Harvey Weinstein? Because up until now, we're seeing a lot of women come forward, but they don't meet the statute of limitations. Do you think that could change?
Look, we know how difficult it is to prosecute these rape cases. We saw that with Brock Turner, the Stanford student who was accused of rape and wound up walking free. We know that it's difficult to present these cases, so there are going to be some barriers. But I think that this is a step in the right direction, absolutely.
And you know, with the LAPD investigating and with all of this public pressure, frankly, you shouldn't need the public pressure. It should either meet the standard of evidence required to bring a case or not. But the public pressure doesn't hurt in this case. I think they will perhaps be able to cobble together a case. But it does end up being he says, she says a little bit. Mm-hmm. There are enough she says along the way, again, to, I think, make a compelling case. The Brock Turner is a great reminder because there was a witness in that case, and the guy still skated. That was skated because they claimed it was consensual or some crap. It was, I'm sorry, it just obviously for me it didn't pass the smell test. But in any case, I do think you'll be left with a tough case, but you could probably bring a case.
Mm-hmm. And Brock Turner is no Harvey Weinstein. That's another element too. Harvey Weinstein still is this very powerful figure, so I think that presents some challenges as well.
Although Harvey Weinstein, pardon for interrupting, has money, but I think his brand, I hate to use that word, but the Harvey Weinstein name has been horribly damaged to the point that there's almost a presumption of guilt.
And also, like you said, all these stories, the details are just, they're strikingly similar.
You go beat by beat, you hear about the massages and just isolating a woman where maybe she wasn't aware that they were going to have an isolated encounter before. Lupita Nyong'o says that she'd kind of assumed on a number of occasions that it was going to be a group dinner, and that did not end up being the case. And when it comes to witnesses, I think that's sort of an interesting dynamic that we're hearing about with regards to Harvey Weinstein, is you have people that were complicit. You know, I mean, you hear about these people who knew more and did not enough, and we're going to get into that in a later story. And it's sort of they're not necessarily witnesses if they're not, you know, in the room, but people who are nervous enough and who are telling stories. Lupita was saying that when she was sitting down at a dinner when she was just a student at Yale, that people were giving her sort of advice like, all right, you need Harvey Weinstein, but just be aware that he can be, you know, a bully was the word that they were using. But you sort of know. You know what they're referring
to. This is a real problem with these sexual abuse cases, and it extends to, as we know, much greater universes than Harvey Weinstein. This idea that there's an awareness but no one says anything. It's happened in the Catholic Church. I mean, you know, once the top was blown off that, you see that there must have been all this awareness. You, to the point that you're going, was everybody aware? And yet there's awful sexual abuse there. So I think it's a great and provocative question. Even though you're not a witness to it, if you have awareness of it, what is your obligation at that point?
Like the female assistant who left the room, according to Lupita's account, as soon as she sat down to dinner with Harvey Weinstein, his female assistant was nowhere to be found. Sort of this honeypot that lured other women into these similar situations. How do you live with that? I mean, I can't say for sure that woman knew, but we know that other people in his company knew about this. How do you live with that kind of guilt?
Yeah, and I think that what we need to see is that this level of transparency that is so recent will lead to accountability. And with that, let's get into another story related to Harvey Weinstein. Director Quentin Tarantino is saying that he knew enough to have done more than he did with regards to the allegations of sexual misconduct coming up against Harvey Weinstein. So in a recent interview, he says the following quote, "I knew enough to do more than I did," citing several episodes involving prominent actresses. "There was more to it than just the normal rumors, the normal gossip. It wasn't secondhand. I knew he did a couple of these things. I wish I had taken responsibility for what I heard. If I had done the work I should have done then, I would have had not. If I had done the work I should have done then, I would have had to not work with him." You guys may remember that he dated actress Mira Sorvino. He says of that, his own former girlfriend, Mira Sorvino, told him about unwelcome advances and unwanted touching by Mr. Weinstein. Another actress told him a similarly upsetting story years later. He also knew the actress Rose McGowan had reached a settlement with the producer. Now, he does a lot of explaining, and it is important to take the full context of his statements. In part, what he says is, "I chalked it up to a 50s, 60s era image of a boss chasing a secretary around the desk, as if that's okay. That's the egg on my face right now." And he also calls out his male counterparts in the industry. He says, "I'm calling on the other guys who knew more to not be scared. Don't just give out statements. Acknowledge that there was something rotten in Denmark. Vow to do better by our sisters." This is such a conflicting statement to read, because he is admitting to his own culpability. He's saying, "I was wrong." And yet it is so, when someone apologizes, I'm inclined to believe them. But at the same time, it's so frustrating to hear from people who knew in the industry, and that's something that we've talked about a lot on this show, that people knew, and to hear from him that he's saying, "Oh yeah, people knew," and they just let this sickness, this toxicity, just lay dormant in the industry and abuse women for so long. His own girlfriend was a victim of this. It's incredibly troubling, but yet at the same time, I am encouraged that at least we're hearing from men try and hold each other accountable. Where do you guys fall on this?
So I was just going to mention one thing, which is weird and is professional to Hollywood, and I'm sure it extends beyond, and that is the professional bind that Tarantino is implicitly referencing here, right? He's saying, "I wanted to work with Harvey Weinstein, and that's why I was in a tough position, and that's why I didn't do more." As Grace was saying, his own girlfriend was a victim of this. He could have said, "Oh my God, well, we got to go to the police. This is a serious situation with this guy." And I've heard of other situations too. I mean, is that too much to have asked him to do? But he felt a professional pressure that maybe he rationalized that, A, I don't think I could, the cops are going to do much, and B, Weinstein's going to crush me. I'll never get another movie made. And that's the professional bind he found himself in, and it's weird to hear him talking about it now as he looks back on what he could have done.
And I think it's just sickening to hear the level of honesty, because I'm sure that was the bind that he felt, and then you realize that people were valuing their professional careers and weighing that with allegations that they knew to be true of sexual assault at the hands of this movie mogul.
This is the tipping point. This is a defining moment for Hollywood, because what you've both said is right. People have cared more about the bottom line, more about their profit, their return, than the safety of their colleagues and women in this industry, and men. There are young men who have also been preyed on by older people in the industry. So it is conflicting. I do have trouble with this, and I want to, again, just applaud the women who have found the courage and the strength to come forward and talk about their experiences. As disappointing as it is to hear that Tarantino knew about this and could have done more, I am just so glad that someone is finally coming out and saying, yes, I have egg on my face. Yes, I knew that this was happening. Because we saw those cowardly statements immediately after all this stuff started to come out. And I was just disgusted.
Because I think that, you know, the truth, as much as it stings, feels better than the lip service that we did
Absolutely.
Get in a lot of the statements that were released of men that you knew. We all knew. I'm saying knew too much, but what but I think that it is oddly refreshing and sickening at the same time for Quentin Tarantino to come out and say, yeah, I was wrong. I majorly messed up, and I'm calling on my male counterparts in the industry that we need to do better. And the first step in doing better is acknowledging that you messed up for years and allowed this to go on. And now I feel like we can grow, but we can't grow from lip service. We can't grow from someone being like, my thoughts and prayers are with the victims. I had no idea. Oh no, so sad. I have daughters. What does that mean? That doesn't help us. We're growing from this statement. The industry will grow.
I can't do anything with the statement that your publicist told you to say.
Yeah.
I can't do anything with that. Mm-hmm. So I would love to see more people come out and have the same kind of honesty and self-reflection that Tarantino had.
You know, it's funny. I'm thinking back, not funny, just interesting, funny, interesting, to think back on the Bill Cosby case and how you needed that Hannibal Buress mention that, well, you guys, you know, all know he's a rapist, and yet we all just, and all of a sudden, there was as though the nation just turned its head at once and focused on that. And in this case, you needed those first accounts to come forward and be in the public record. And then all of this torrent began. And I suspect that it will continue and then broaden to include some of the men, which is why I mention it. But because at some point, it gets safer to come out.
Absolutely.
Early on, as you say, they're really just going, you know, I want a non-committal statement. We know it's bad. I don't want to get involved. I don't want any of this on me.
Yeah. And that's why, you know, we need to, you know, this is one thing, Quentin Tarantino coming out, but really the courageous and the bravery here is with the survivors that have come forward, because had they not, I don't think we would be getting this statement from Quentin Tarantino. It seems like he was pretty fine living with that silence for as long as he had. So it is so, like, we need to celebrate those people who have come forward and are the tipping point. Mm-hmm. We don't need to celebrate the people that came out on the crest of the wave. That said, I do think this is a good growing moment for Hollywood.
But I would rather someone wait like he did and come out with something real that we can actually do something with than say something completely meaningless just right off the top.
Yeah, don't wait and speed dial your publicist.
Right.
That's not what I want to wait for.
But think about how locked down he was, last point on this, because of when I think of Mira Sorvino. So she's coming back telling him this has happened. And on some level, for him to continue to do business with the Weinstein Company, she's having to say, don't worry about it, honey. I mean, it's okay. Yep. I'm used to this. Believe me, directors do it all the time. It speaks to the culture of Hollywood.
Yes.
That somehow he was able to continue to do business and she wasn't bothered by it. She wasn't saying, how dare you do business? I mean, it didn't turn into any kind of issue. So there's complicity all around to be shared.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So our last sort of heavy story before we go to break has to deal with magician David Blaine. David Blaine has been accused of rape by a former model. This is coming from the Daily Beast. Here are the details. Natasha Prince claims Blaine raped her at a private home in London's Chelsea neighborhood in the summer of 2004, months after her 21st birthday. She told the Daily Beast in her first ever interview on the subject. Officers from the Met's Child Abuse and Sexual Offenses Command are investigating an allegation of rape, Scotland Yard said in a statement to the Daily Beast. The allegation was reported to police on 17 November 2016 by a woman who alleged she was raped at an address in Chelsea in June or July 2004 when she was age 21. There have been no arrests at this stage, and inquiries continue. Now, Blaine's attorney, Marty Singer, has vehemently denied all the allegations of any misconduct with the individual, although they do acknowledge that they did know each other at one point in time. The allegations are incredibly graphic. She says that she was at a party and she was flirting with Blaine, and then at one point in time, they went up to have a drink. And then the next thing she knew, he was anally penetrating her, and that she just says that she felt I was limp and I was very floaty, in and out of sleep. What's important to note is that there is no statute of limitations for sex crimes in Britain. And when it comes to the evidence, she points to a conversation that she had with an ex-boyfriend, but who was her boyfriend at the time in 2004 when she alleges the rape took place. In a series of direct text messages on Instagram, this boyfriend reminded Prince of that crazy weird situation with David Blaine after we broke up, that he made a move on you in bed like he forced himself on you. You told me how you ended up in his bed and he was trying on stuff. When asked why it took 13 years for her to tell police, Prince told the Daily Beast, and I think this is really important, you hear this a lot from survivors of sexual assault, quote, you have to understand my interpretation was that it was my fault. I didn't think of it as rape. In my head, rape was being sober. Pull her in a bush, pull down her pants, and just ditch her. So I blame myself. I did like him. I was interested in him, so I didn't think about going to the police. Now, I think what's particularly troubling about what we're hearing out of this so early on is the lawyer representing David Blaine, who also happened to represent John Travolta, Bill Cosby, Charlie Sheen, said in a phone call, quote, anyone can make a claim, especially with this Harvey Weinstein thing. Now, what's worth also noting is that she actually made this claim a full year before the Harvey Weinstein piece came out. I just think that it's incredibly indelicate for the lawyer of someone accused to just refer to allegations of sexual assault as the Harvey Weinstein thing. We know very little about what's happening in this story, but what was your response when you heard about these allegations? Did you immediately correlate it to the Harvey Weinstein, quote unquote, thing?
The lawyer's comment struck me as him just trying to muddy the water and doing it, as you say, it, in an indelicate way would be a polite way to put it. I mean, it's really in a crude way to somehow, I mean, this woman has been traumatized. She's coming forward now reluctantly, which is the way so many of these victims do come forward, and to sort of roll her into the existing atmosphere. Well, you know, the Harvey Weinstein thing. I just thought it was, I thought it was rude. She also tells a believable story, you know, and it's interesting. Grace, it's funny when we're getting to the part where she talks about she had an interest in David Blaine. It then made it murky a little bit for me. I'm thinking, well, I don't quite understand then. I need clarity, and maybe I can get clarity from you guys on this. Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty common, but it just, you have to have consent at every stage of the process.
Sure.
So you can have an interest in someone, you can even be flirting with someone, you can go over to their house expecting to become intimate with that person, but that person has to have your consent in order to penetrate. I mean, I'm sorry for being graphic,
no,
but that's, and this is the-
We're talking about anal penetration here.
Exactly.
But serious thing.
I applaud you for just asking that question, because we need to create an environment where we are comfortable asking these questions, because there are some men who don't understand, and we need to just talk about this and make sure that we all are on the same page about what consent means, and that consent at every stage.
It explained why she didn't go to the cops, because you always hear, how come you didn't go to the police? I mean, if it was so bad, if it was rape, why don't you go to the cops? Mm-hmm. She was trying to say, my emotions were muddied. I knew I'd been violated, you can call it something weird happened, that was according to the boyfriend, but she was violated. Yet she didn't go to the cops because she liked this guy.
You create a narrative in your head. You create ways to deal with it. You create ways to grieve. And sometimes that looks like searching for things that you could have done differently. Mm-hmm. And I think what she said is so true for a lot of women.
Well, especially her inner monologue, what she says the morning after she was doing a photo shoot. And she says that while she was sitting in the makeup chair, she was asking herself questions like, what did I do last night? Did I have sex with David Blaine, but I didn't want to? And just feeling really hazy and out of it. And just knowing that she didn't give consent, but she was into him. And I understand why it can be sort of a difficult conversation to have, because consent is sort of, It is a hard thing to define, but it is so incredibly important to define. So a lot of people say, "Oh, do I have to ask? Can I please kiss you here?" We're not talking about that. But when someone says no, or when they are not able to give consent, when they are intoxicated, when they are asleep, anything like that, then you don't have it. Consent can never be assumed. I think that's it can be taken away. It can never be assumed. So I think that's an important thing to remember. And heartbreaking stories like this come forward, cause us to have these difficult conversations and to raise a better generation when it comes to consent as just par for the course when it comes to any sorts of relationship, intimate or otherwise, then good. And that's the silver lining.
Yeah. That's a great point. I'm so glad you made it, because even if this sweet model who got into this thing, it's a high profile celebrity thing, model and the high profile guy, even if that doesn't turn out to bring a court case, or even if there are issues surrounding this that leave us short of where we'd like to see the conclusion result, I think Grace makes a great point. It helps incrementally anyway change the way we look at the way these sexual encounters happen without consent. And so the consent issue anyway starts to be discussed more again.
Mm-hmm. All of these things on top of each other help us do that. Just looking back to, you know, over the past year with Roger Ailes, Bill O'Reilly, the Donald Trump Access Hollywood tape, all of these things, I see this momentum, and it's allowing us to have these conversations. And just, I mean,
these are progressive conversations, and this is a progressive network. So I want to celebrate, even when it comes on the heels of something awful, that we can have these conversations that I do believe move us forward. So that's going to be it for this first segment. We're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to be telling you all about Playmate for November, December, because as if I wasn't gay enough. And then we're going to be talking about Boy Scouts again, because I'm not gay enough. So we'll see you after the break. Welcome back to second hour of TYT Live. I'm joined by me, Grace Baldridge, and then Simone Boyce and Mark Thompson. Welcome back.
The first step to joining is to, you know, admit that you are joining.
I too am here.
You're here too.
Thank you. No one ever says welcome back, here's Grace. Actually, they do all the time. So I said I wasn't going to read some TYT Lives, but I decided I really love communicating with members, so I'm going to do that. It's Just Me says, women are often blamed for sexual assault and rape. Offender society, police, and lawmakers. We survivors are often told to shut up. That is incredibly powerful. That's true. Annie says, people will say they respect women's rights all day long, but won't call out their friends who do sexually harass people. So do you. I think accountability is so important. And if that's something that we can bring out in our friends and the people that we surround ourselves with, then awesome. Let's do it. So let's talk about the Cub Scouts. Let's talk about a Cub Scout who is making news. A Cub Scout from Colorado is heartbroken after he was kicked out of his den for asking the following question of State Senator Vicky Marble. Let's take a look.
Why on earth would you want somebody who beats their wife to have access to a gun? There's something wrong in our country where Republicans believe it's a right to own a gun, but a privilege to have health care.
I don't think any child should be banned from coming back for asking a tough question.
We know what you're thinking. This is a case of a parent scoring political points by using their kid as the messenger.
You know, I hit the printer button and helped him work out the printer, but no, it wasn't my agenda. There were kids who asked about fracking, about the border wall, about fossil fuels. In the mix of that, it didn't seem like gun control was that different.
So that was 11-year-old Ames Mayfield, and he is currently on the search for a new den. But the Boy Scouts of America have released the following statement saying, the Boy Scouts of America and the Denver Area Council are pleased that the family will continue their participation in scouting. We are committed to working with families to find local units that best fit their needs. Now, I can't stress enough how special of a kid Ames Mayfield seems. He is incredibly smart, witty, a little precocious. I don't believe that this was the political agenda of the mom. Although when I heard the story initially, I fully believed that. I was like, nice job, parent, you're doing the project. But it seems like this is something that he has stayed informed on, that he's interested in. I think the question is so fair.
Totally
it is
fair.
Really strange that it was indeed the PAC leader that kicked out Ames, and I'm blurry on how that works. My brother was an Eagle Scout, but I totally blacked out for the entirety of when he was doing that. Mm-hmm. And so the PAC leader is different than the den leader. The PAC leader was the one that asked for that said that Ames was no longer going to be a part of it, but now he's going to find a different den in Colorado. But this question is not an unfair question.
No, it's totally fair game, and his rationale behind it. By the way, Ames Mayfield, little rock star future journalist that he is the treasurer of his student government. This kid he's a prodigy. He's so smart. Just to prepare this list of questions, I was collecting Beanie Babies when I was his age. Like, I was pathetic.
I was stealing Girl Scout cookies. I wasn't even selling them. They wouldn't even let me.
I was probably chowing down on some mimosas.
You were chowing down on some mimosas.
Wow, then you were
for coaches. My parents were hippies. Yeah. They were really cool. No, but it was totally fair game because he researched this state senator and saw that that the Second Amendment was a huge part of her platform. And so he thought that that would be a good opportunity to ask her. And also, I mean, let's not forget about the tragedy that happened in Las Vegas, just a short while ago. This was weighing on this kid's mind. And I think it was actually very sensitive and poignant of him to bring up these questions.
Now, Simone makes a great point about you got to look at the context of this question. And that is that it's the shadow of Las Vegas was hanging over this. And also, the other context that's important is the context of what was going on in the den meeting or whatever you know it's called when they're asking all these other questions that are about fracking and about the list of issues that are all associated with things that are making headlines now. So these are all fair questions, and then default to the fact that this is an outspoken legislator when it comes to Second Amendment rights, and it's a completely appropriate question. It's sad. To use the Trump in caps with the exclamation mark, it's sad to me that the Boy Scouts of America issued that ridiculously lame statement where they say nothing, and we hope to, like, it's like Match.com. We hope to have this Cub Scout can end up with the appropriate den. Like what? Where they don't talk about this kind of thing, or they bring in legislators and you're not allowed to have a dialogue with them?
Yeah, it just seems like you're punishing a kid for doing his research, because what he did point out that Senator Vicky Marble did correlate something about black Americans having poor health because of barbecue chicken, and he called her out on that. So the gun control question is the one that is getting the headlines right now, but he really did his research on who the senator was that was going to be visiting with the troop and asked her questions based on her own record. Why are we punishing him? Again, like you said, it's just a little prodigy journalist. That's more research than a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, and that question about health and poverty in black communities, I think what this kid was trying to get clarification on is, okay, we're talking about personal decisions that people are making about their health, what they choose to eat, but we're ignoring the discrimination that is rampant in the healthcare system and how that is linked to higher rates of hypertension and high blood pressure. We're ignoring how the infant mortality rate for black babies is much higher in segregated cities across America. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that Ms. Marble answered that.
Seems like she lost her marbles. I'm so sorry.
All right. Let me say one last thing about this Cub Scout thing, because you could have gone the other way and it would have been so great for the Boy Scouts of America and the Cub Scouts. You could have celebrated this conversation and said, this is, guys, wait a minute, if there were jeers or boos, this is what we're about. We've got to be tolerant of a real conversation that accepts all of these different viewpoints. You could really, in this community that is probably quite repressed as far as this is concerned, you could really be on the cutting edge of a real conversation about these issues.
And setting an example for the rest of the country. Look, this is an 11-year-old boy and a state senator having a more civil discourse than it seems we often have as adults in the country. What a good example that we can try and emulate. But that's
here, not here. How it would have happened. Exactly.
I would applaud this kid whether he asked a Democrat or a Republican tough questions.
Oh, yeah.
Just to have the courage at that age to be able to do that. And then on the heels of the very political speech that the president made at the Boy Scouts Jamboree, Boy Scouts issued this statement saying that we are a nonpartisan organization, but then why isn't this kid allowed to stay in his den?
Snaps for you, Simone, 100%. All right, so let's move on to maybe my favorite story of the day. I like whenever we just have a nice end to a story, just saying, we solved it, there we go, you're welcome, everybody. All right, so Playboy has announced who their playmate will be for the November-December 2017 issue. It is a model by the name of Ines Rao. Let's take a look. She looks beautiful. Do we have another photo?
Seems do you have another 40 or 50 photos maybe of her?
All right, so she's not making headlines because she's just a beautiful playmate, although she absolutely is. She's making headlines because she is the first openly transgender person to be named a Playboy playmate in the 64-year history of the publication. She did speak out about this in the interview. She says, quote, "I lived a long time without saying I was transgender. I dated a lot and almost forgot. I was scared of never finding a boyfriend and being seen as weird. Then I was like, you know, you should just be who you are. It's a salvation to speak the truth about yourself, whether it's your gender, sexuality, whatever. The people who reject you aren't worth it. It's not about being loved by others. It's about loving yourself." Later on in the interview, she says something that I think is so cool, which is being a woman doesn't mean being extremely feminine all the time. Being a woman is just being a woman. And as a woman who is not extremely feminine any of the time, I super agree with that. Now, something that's worth noting is that transgender individuals have appeared in the pages of Playboy before, but this is the first time that they have had a playmate as their playmate. I don't actually really know how Playboy playmates go and how what that means, but it is an honor in the modeling world. I think this is awesome. What do you guys think about this?
I'm all for it. I mean, I've got no issue with you. But you look both. You guys both look at me like,
come on, Mark, yeah, say something offensive.
I'm all for it. I mean, beautiful lady, she's incredible. I don't know what more to say. I haven't looked at her likes and dislikes, which is what usually the Playboy playmates break down their centerfold.
I
like
Instagram.
Men who read poetry and you know whatever. I haven't read it all, but.
Oh, so that's so. I was literally thinking when you said likes and dislikes, my brain went to Instagram. Apparently, they asked them questions.
Oh yeah, I mean, I like to know my playmates, like to really get into what they're all about.
So you'll need to wait to see the issue before you say yay or nay.
Thank you. Exactly.
All right. What about you, Simone?
I think the reason why I looked at Mark is because I think that Playboy, its number one focus has been to please and satisfy and feed the male gaze. So I have some of my own issues about Playboy, and I don't think it's always been a level playing field. But that's another for men and women. But that's another story.
That's absolutely a good story, though.
But I mean, for this story, were you surprised? Were you especially pleased? Were you concerned? Because I have a feeling that the internet is for some reason, even though it's a beautiful playmate, you're welcome, November, December, is going to have strong feelings about this.
Well, the thing that she said about being a woman isn't always about being feminine, that definitely resonated with me as well, because I love exploring that balance of masculine and feminine. So I definitely applaud her for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that let's remember that gender is a construct and you can play around with it as much as you want. But I'm even hesitant to even bring that into the conversation, because here's the thing. For the beauty standards for being a Playboy playmate are pretty rigid, as far as I know. Again, as someone who does not read the magazine, and maybe I should start. Maybe I'll start now. Who knows? We'll go crazy. But you know, she meets the criteria. So yeah, duh, she's gonna be the playmate. And I'm sure that we'll see other trans models be playmates. Great.
Right. I mean, they're glamour models and glamour sexual models. And so, yeah, if they meet that standard from whatever their history is, then they can be in that universe of people who are now in the magazine or whatever it is, the digital magazine now. I don't know what their new incarnation is. But there's obviously a lot more here to Playboy and the objectification of women and all that sort of stuff. But just on this story, as Grace says, yeah, she meets the threshold, and so she's in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's all we have to say about that. Again, we solved it. You're welcome. Moving on to our last story.
Ask a bunch of progressives about whether or not this is okay, Playboy magazine picture, and we're going to give you all the problems with
it. Why is this a story? Okay. Oh, man. I don't think the London Evening Standard listened to Solange Knowles' album, A Seat at the Table, specifically the song Don't Touch My Hair, before they featured her on the cover, because they really messed up the entire thing. And she called them out on social media. So let's first take a look at the photo of the cover. Looks like a pretty normal cover, right? It's What could be missing? Well, Solange made sure she let them know exactly what was missing from the cover shoot. Looks like she drew the crown there. And then do we have the other photo from her Instagram? We do not have that other photo. But what you'll see is that there was actually a full braid that was making a crown of the likes that she'd sort of drawn on in her Instagram story that was cut out from the edition of the London Evening Standard. You can see it actually on the background behind us. You can see the full image that was cut out. Now, this is particularly in poor taste given what the story talks about. The story itself posted online Thursday with the headline "Solange, I miss out on chances by wanting control over my body," focuses heavily on the singer's autonomy and the importance she places on her imagery. Here's an excerpt from the story. "Braiding is important to Knowles. It is an act of beauty, an act of convenience, an act of tradition. It is its own art form," she adds. "Every black woman has a personal journey with her own hair. And for Knowles, it began in her mother's salon, which was a refuge, a spare bedroom, so to speak, for her as a young girl. Growing up there was pivotal. I got to experience women arriving in one state of mind and leaving in a completely transformed way," she said. "It wasn't just about the hair, it was about the sisterhood and the storytelling." Now, this is what's particularly interesting, is that one of the writers of the story, Angelica Bastian, came out on Twitter and disavowed the story. She says, "I am publicly disowning the Solange piece London Evening Standard published today. The entire piece was a fiasco despite my efforts." It really is, something went amiss here. We were talking about this a little bit before, Simone, that it seems as though they did this story and they just didn't know who they were talking to, and they didn't really do research into what is important to Solange and the message that she's trying to further. Would you agree with that?
They didn't listen to her album.
They didn't.
If you listen to her album, you would know that you don't touch Solange's hair, and furthermore, you don't touch a black woman's hair. Okay, like, I don't know why we still have to argue this or why there's still confusion over this. But perhaps, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. This is a magazine from the UK. Maybe culturally they're not quite there yet. Maybe they don't quite understand the complicated history involving black women and their hair.
And I would totally go with you on that.
Okay.
If they didn't fully have access to listen to her damn album where she talks about this.
Valid.
Yeah, it's so frustrating because it's just a case of journalism gone wrong. And I do want to salute Angelica Bastian, because I don't know what went on behind the scenes, but I believe her completely that she is upset and that it was a fiasco and something went amiss, and I'm sure that this wasn't the final edition that she wanted to print.
I mean, it's not unusual in a lot of publications for the headline writer and the picture editor to be disconnected from the story. Okay, so that I get. But to be this completely disconnected, as though, you know, you just didn't really get it at all, it's hard to give them a pass. I think this is a real bad one.
And Solange brought in her own hair team, and she had a vision for this piece. It actually, the circle represents the constellation of Orion, which is apparently something that means a lot to her. So she put a lot of thought into it, which she does with everything. She's a very intentional person. Everything has a purpose and a meaning. So why would you allow her to, I mean, you're seeing her hairstyle as you're shooting it. Why would you allow her to do it and then just cut it out and not think she's gonna say something about it?
It's also, why did you, I mean, she is such an artist. She has such an artistic vision with everything that she's done, especially this most recent album, A Seat at the Table. So why wouldn't you just believe that, this was an intentional choice? Well, I mean, why, it was like, it looks like the hair was a little too high. No, it was intentional.
Yes.
Well, also, you're taking tremendous liberties with somebody's look. That's the way she has her hair. I mean, you're going to crop it and change the way it is? I mean, you can't do that. And I don't get it at all. I just can't give him a pass.
Yeah, I love.
You're not better than Solange Evening Standard.
Well, I love her response on Instagram. She didn't even spell it out for them. She's just like, DTMH.
Yeah, I like it because it's all you need. And look, now here we are talking about it. Well, that's pretty much going to do it from us today. Let me just read one more TYT Live from what has been a super enjoyable Friday show. I've never done a panel with you guys before, and this was awesome.
Yeah, this has been great. Really good.
Let's see. And I hate almost everyone. So
killing it.
Well, actually, it looks like we don't have an update on any TYT Lives. Do you guys have anything that you'd like to plug or
I can plug my podcast, which is The Edge with Mark Thompson.
Nice.
Again, I have to mention with Mark Thompson because there are a bunch of other podcasts called The Edge. So it's The Edge with Mark Thompson. Please find it wherever you find podcasts. And you'll recognize people from the Turks occasionally popping through, maybe even on this panel. Somebody will be by eventually.
Well, thank you.
Breaking news.
Talk to my publicist.
Oh, my gosh.
What about you, Simone? What do you got?
You can catch up with me online everywhere at Simone Boyce. That's Twitter and Instagram. And, yeah, I'll be cooking up some stuff that I'll be putting out there very soon.
Awesome. Yeah. And lastly, for me, there's a whole new season of Murder with Friends Season 2, which you can check out on the Pop Trigger YouTube channel. This week, we're going to be talking about Casey Anthony, and we're taping our Jack the Ripper episode next week. So I'm really excited for you guys to check that out. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been the second hour of TYT, and we will see you guys soon.